Kate McKinnon did a thing with her cats.
Welcome to Geeks Without God with Tim Wick, Nick Glover, and Molly Glover.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks, geeks without God.
This week on Geeks Without God, we are taking a look at comedy online. Since we are all still sheltering in place, comedy is being produced online, and that is a unique challenge and a unique experience.
We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, we're geeks, we're geeks without God. We're geeks, geeks without God.
Okay, we're nuts. Welcome to Geeks Without God. I am your host, Tim Wick. I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Molly Glover.
It's me, Molly Glover.
And Nick Glover.
Hey, that's me. I'm that one.
We've gone slightly Italian. We are still sheltering in place.
Yes.
Or staying at home, depending on which state you're in or country. We don't know if by the time this comes up, if restrictions will have been lifted slightly or not. But we thought this would be a good time to talk about comedy in a world without audiences. Which is something we always talk about, the fact that our podcast is a podcast of three atheist geek comedians. And so today we're going to focus a little bit on being comedians online. I think we all do vilification tennis. We've talked about it before. We have figured out how to be able to continue to produce vilification tennis in an online format in a way that has been successful, I think, for us.
It seems to approximate the experience.
Yeah. The audience seems happy with it at the end of the show. Like,
yeah.
Yeah.
We've gotten very, very strong feedback of positive nature. Not a lot of people telling us, well, I'm never going to watch that again, but I suppose we probably wouldn't get a lot of people telling us that. So who the fuck knows? But, I mean, there are other people that late night hosts are still producing monologues and stuff.
Yep.
Saturday Night Live has produced some online shows. I think it's two as of this, of this airing. John Oliver is still producing Last Week Tonight. There are a lot of performers in the Twin Cities who are producing online content right now. And it is a different challenge. It is a different kind of experience as a performer. And I would presume also as an audience member.
Yeah.
But we're going to look at it more from the performer perspective, I think. So, Molly, what have you consumed as online so far?
Mostly we Last Week Tonight and Saturday Night at Home. We've watched both of those, you know, as religiously as we did before, which was we were constant consumers. we were you know, day of or next day consumers of both of those shows. I watched Matt Kesson's Monster Science, a recording, not a live broadcast, but a recording of the live broadcast. I watched that. Mostly I was watching that because I wanted to see how it looked and how it seemed that, you know, like the people, it was going with people in the chat and things. But yeah, I think it's really interesting to watch it because if it's a TV show, I'm used to watching TV shows and only hearing me and Nick laughing, right? Sure. Like I'm not, you know, but it's weird to see something that I wouldn't normally watch on TV, like Monster Science, and to not be in a crowd with a bunch of other people who are all cheering and laughing, or, you know, that there's that thing where like a joke to you might've been funny enough to be kind of like, ha ha. But then everyone else starts to laugh and you're kind of like, oh yeah, actually, you know, yeah. It kind of makes you laugh a little harder. And I've been missing that experience. I've been missing that experience or even the experience of being the only one laughing when other strangers are just sort of, you know, chuckling a little, you know, like that's, it is definitely different as a consumer. Mm-hmm. Nick, you've seen the shows. You watch the Vill shows, right?
A little bit.
Yeah.
I saw one of the short ones and I saw some of the one that you were helping with online a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
I was kind of focusing more on it like technically.
Sure.
Sure.
For feedback or for, because we're still kind of figuring it out a little bit then.
Well, that's what we do when we go see Bill shows live anyway, right? We're not there, really.
It's hard to, I can't, unless we're at the Bryant Lake Bowl and I've been drinking, I have a hard time not like dissecting Bill when I see it. It's not easy to be audience for Bill. So yeah, the only stuff I've been audience for really is the same stuff Molly kind of mentioned that we watched together. And I haven't performed it all online yet. So, yeah.
You will be in a couple of weeks. Well, maybe like right after this May episode 8th. Goes up. No, right before. Anyway.
Yeah.
I've watched a lot of the same stuff that you two have. For as an audience member, it is weird because the laughter is contagious when I've almost been surprised since some of the stuff like the Saturday Night Live shows they actually recorded ahead of time, and I've been a little surprised they didn't try to can laughter.
I'm glad they're not.
Oh, I think it's good that they aren't, but I'm a little surprised they didn't try and put in a laugh track. And the same for Last Week Tonight. I'm a little surprised by that too, especially since that one is especially John Oliver's presentation style is so polished. You know, his delivery as in watching, and I watched a couple of his online, you know, shelter at home shows. And then I watched a couple of his older shows, and his delivery does not change a whole hell of a lot. He times it out as if you're going to laugh, but he keeps going because he's only got X amount of time to get through all this shit. I find myself laughing at his stuff more than I do at some of the other stuff that I do, just because he is really good at delivering a punchline in a way that you're like, oh, that's my laughter moment. I will do that. Saturday Night Live doesn't feel like, because of the way they develop their show, it doesn't feel like they're as experienced at that. And I think it shows in what they're doing. I think Ville, we're more experienced with audience laughter and how that affects the flow
of the
show.
And the lack of it.
Or the lack thereof. But what we've done that I honestly think is smart, and I is we have the performers leave their audio on, even if their video isn't on, and they laugh at everybody's jokes. So we have live laughter, and it's not a room full of people. It's maybe three or four or five people. Because my job is being the host, I laugh at stuff a lot more than I would if I'm on stage. Because I feel like if I provide a positive reaction, I think that helps the audience. And I think that helps the performers feel like they're getting a response. And I think that that is something that's unique about the format of our show that has worked to our advantage trying to create this.
Does anyone know what was the first like U.S. comedy television show where they didn't use a laugh track? Because I remember when we were kids, like it felt like all comedies had laugh tracks, right? Like
it was always,
or a studio audience at least, right? Like at least there was a studio audience laughing. But then there was this trend with like The Office and like Parks and Rec and some more of those, like they started to shoot like documentary style kind of comedies. And then there were more that didn't have any laughter. And I wonder if this feels less weird because we're used to having, there are a lot of comedy shows out there that don't have any laughter, like Schitt's Creek and Parks and Rec and The Office and Arrested Development and, you know, a lot of other pretty big comedy shows that don't have any laughter or any studio audience in there. And maybe that's part of why it's easier to consume comedy now with this like lack of other audience.
Let's see. I'm looking up. First comedy show without a laugh track. There was an episode of Hogan's Heroes without it. They were experimenting with it, but it wasn't the whole run. But I'm looking up. Comedy shows with no laugh track on IMDb to see what the earliest one was.
Sure. Nick?
So it's you know the joke is that, or the adage is that the you know, one of the most important things for comedy is just timing.
Mm-hmm.
And timing is like entirely one directional, right? Kind of with online streaming. I mean, you might have castmates that you're performing with online, but even then your timing is fucked because of delays and mm-hmm. stutters, and whatever chat application you're using might not let you speak over each other or interrupt each other. It might only do one voice at a time. But then, like, you know, what's the most important part of a joke is the delivery.
Yeah.
And like, you have so little control over that when you're not doing it live. And then what's another really important part of doing comedy? Knowing your audience and reading their reactions.
Yeah. So read the room.
Prepare your material or say the right things you want to say, or change what you're saying mid flight to kind of adjust to their expectations. And you can't really do any of that. Not in any meaningful way. Mm-hmm. I mean, if for Vilification Tennis, you have someone in chat on like the Facebook stream taking questions or suggestions or whatever to pass along to the cast for improv, but the delay between what you're saying and how it gets streamed in like the Zoom meeting,
mm-hmm.
and then the delay to it being streamed on Facebook or mm-hmm. your YouTube. I mean, sometimes you're looking at like a 45-second delay between asking for something and then getting that something, and then another 45 seconds between it being typed and then it being relayed.
Yeah.
And like, nothing's better for comedy than dead air and waiting for something to happen. Like, it's.
And like, people will be like, oh my God, that was so funny. But it'll come up in the chat, and I'm like, I don't know what that was even for. Like, but, honestly, yeah. like, there's been six jokes. I mean, that could have been any of it. Like,
it's,
or like, I was manning the chat this last time, and people were like, oh, that's fucked up. But I don't know what was fucked up. And my meter for that's gone. Like, I don't know anymore.
Because, granted, you're watching the stream, so it's a little closer to when it's actually happening, but it takes X amount of time for people to click something.
Or for the chat, it'll lag, and what would happen with Facebook Live is it would do drops. It does dumps of like 15 messages at a time.
Yeah.
And then nothing. And then 20 messages, and then nothing. So it can be really tricky.
Yeah, and we've tried to integrate some audience interaction, which we've done all right. And it's like, it's the best you can do, right? You just do mm-hmm. the best you can do. But it's been a real like every show we try something a little different. We discover something that we can do to improve how we connect with the audience, how we understand what the audience is enjoying, but it's hard because there is no feedback loop. And in comedy, you really kind of rely on that for live comedy. Larry Sanders' show, by the way, 1992, looked like one of the earliest.
Oh, that makes sense. HBO.
There's also an Indian show that's been running for since 1984 that doesn't have a laugh track. So there you go. And that's probably not – none of that is actually accurate. I mean, MASH had a laugh track for part of their run, but they stopped using it about halfway through the run.
Yeah, I remember that.
So,
or in reruns. I watched it in syndication, obviously, but
So maybe MASH. MASH is.
I will say too, something else that's really tricky that I've realized is that for Ville specifically, and we've talked about it before on this show, the idea of the joking envelope and how we at the beginning of the show, any Ville show. Tim says, you know, sets up the audience expectation. If it's going to be offensive, you're going to hear really terrible shit. There's going to be swearing. There's going to be, you know, all this stuff. Anything that you could be offended by, you will be. And like we've talked about the challenges of doing it out at RenFest, where anybody can wander in after you've already given that warning. You're not going to be giving the warning before every joke. And that's very similar to this online thing is people can just wander into the show where that can't happen at the Bryant Lake Bowl, or at least it doesn't. Right. So like it's a very interesting thing to have it be like, oh, there's 1200 views on this. And it's like, oh God, well, I hope that they watched it from the start where there's like the little bit of a warning of what's going on, but you never know. Like somebody could just pop in Facebook Live because someone shared it and they're like, oh, what's this? Mm-hmm. Oh my God, abortions. Like, you know, and they're like, click, 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 you know, like
That's complain. Not funny. Report. Yeah.
That was them clicking on the heart.
Yeah. Abortions. Yeah. Abortions.
Yay, abortions. The one thing that I'll say that kind of I'm tired of now, and you even brought it up earlier, I'm tired of people talking during their monologues and stuff about how this is weird and hard. It's like, fucking hey, man, I know. Now, maybe it's because I know, because I'm trying to do it. You know, I'm trying to do stuff in front of an audience. But at the same time, it's like, we know.
You've been doing it
for a few weeks.
Well, I mean, you do address it in the Ville shows, or at least the two that I've seen parts of. You did say it at one point or another, like, this is weird. This is not how we normally do it. This is different. I think it's worth putting out there, or at least acknowledging it, like, with the audience. Like, hey, we all know this isn't normal. Ha ha.
I think it's similar to how at Huge, before every Huge show, they're like, everything you're about to see tonight is completely made up. None of it was pre-written. None of it scripted. This is improv. Improv is we make it up, like 100%. And if it sounds hard, it is, you know, that kind of a thing. And I think that's most people have never tried to do comedy. And that's why I think it's so funny when you get people talking about how SNL is garbage and it has been funny for years. And it's like, well, one, I don't think you're watching it. And two, I don't think you have any idea of what it is to write, do, perform, you know, and then do live comedy.
It's very easy to be critical of things that you don't know anything about.
Yeah.
I mean, it's why the internet was created. So I guess that's fine.
Thanks, Bob.
Yeah, Bob. What a fucker. But I'm not even saying I don't think it should be mentioned. It's just that at some point, and I usually mention it at the outset of the show, you know, hey, we can't hear you laughing. So, but we're going to try and keep an eye on it. We want to see your reactions. That helps us know. But it also adding performers laughing. And when other people have talked to me about, hey, I want to do an online show, can you give me advice? And I'm like, well, if you're doing a comedy show, have people there to laugh at the jokes. Cause it makes a huge difference as a performer to know that something you said is funny to somebody.
I think too, it's that whole thing of like, is this even important right now? And I think it is. I think similar to what Jon Stewart said after 9/11, when they came back, his first show after they came back after the 9/11 attacks. And he was like, okay, like everything is awful and it is bad and we are grieving, and New York, especially, it's really bad, but like, we have to move forward. We have to laugh. Like, we have to have this. And, you know, for those of us here, the reason we do this for a living, you know, and in our case, a hobby, is because this is what gets us through. Like, this is what we do. This is what we do. Like, nobody who's in vilification tennis wasn't somebody who makes jokes all the time in their normal life. Right. There's nobody who's like, actually, usually I don't like jokes and I don't think that we should make fun of things. I just only do that on stage. Like, we're all very fuck it, laugh through the graveyard kind of people. And I think that this is especially a time to try to bring that, you know, and give anything you can.
Yeah. And I think, I think that, there have been plenty of people who have commented on our live streams, you know, thank you guys. I needed this right now. I needed this experience. And, I think that the fact that people like Jon Stewart, people like the late night talk show host, people like Saturday Night Live are like, fuck it, we're going to make something happen. I mean, like,
things feel a little more normal.
Yeah. Even though I don't give a flying fuck about it, I will applaud, American Idol for doing a fucking show.
Did they really?
They did a show. Everybody was like doing their performances from home.
Wow.
And, I didn't watch it, but I saw previews for it. You know, it's like,
it's crazy.
The fact that people are still trying to connect with audiences makes a difference. And as we have conversations, and as I've had conversations about shows being canceled, those are almost always combined with, is there a way to create an online experience so people can see something, so people can experience something? And And, you know, we talked, I think, in the last episode about the fact, like, the Metropolitan Opera is doing free broadcasts of old shows. And the Broadway Theater or something or other is doing free broadcasts of old shows. And that seems to make a big difference to people, you know. But that's existing content. New content is like, holy shit, the world has not ended.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And that to me feels absolutely important. And it feels like you got to work through that weirdness and just say, it is important for me as a creator to continue to create. So I feel like the thing that drives me continues to happen. And it's important to the audience to see creators continue to create.
It's also totally legitimate, I will say too, if you're like, I got nothing right now. I don't like, you know, what I do is get up in front of a room full of people and do stuff. And that's not able to happen. So I can't create. That's legit. Like, I think there's a lot of pressure from this. Like you said, how can we make this online? That's great. But I feel like a lot of people have mentioned that they feel pressured to create. And they feel like they have to be doing something online or they're going to stop being relevant. And I hope that we can all remember that just because someone didn't manage to get something online during a crisis doesn't mean that they don't deserve your attention and your money, you know, after everything goes back to normal. So.
Oh, absolutely. And I've had people involved in shows with me that have said, you know, I can't do this right now. Yeah. It's like, absolutely no judgment whatsoever.
There's all kinds of reasons. Technology, mood.
If you can't do this right now, I'm not going to judge you. I think there are creators like myself.
Yeah.
That it's like you feel that it energizes you. It makes you feel better about all this shit to feel like you haven't stopped doing shit. Like you, Molly. I don't know about Nick, I think that people have to do, we keep talking about it, but it's true. People have to do what's right. And
we're still writing. We're working out. We got a script. We got to finish up this weekend. Like, you know, there are still things due, you know, that are,
we're still writing Ville jokes.
We're still having Ville sessions, like, and making sure that we're coming up with new content, and even harder, new content that doesn't have anything to do with COVID-19 or staying at home, right?
Yeah, like, don't write about the thing that's occupying like every waking moment of your brain.
Yeah. It's pretty tricky. And like, you know, that's it's, but also like, I think too, you know, Nick and I are, our funniest moments are often things that happen just the two of us when we're not writing it down or putting it online or posting about it. Like, there's just, and that I think is also important to like draw inspiration from that. Like, we've had a couple of things happen that have led to some funny, you know, Ville joke thoughts, or like, you know, oh, that could we make that a joke? You know, like, oh, could that be a joke? And I think it's, yeah, I think like, comedy will survive, you know, comedy will survive this. I think that maybe the return to live theater is going to be a slow go, but I'm really glad to know that people didn't just decide, well, without an audience to adore me, then I don't even care. Because I mean, that would be a valid thing. You know, if what you love, if you get off on the applause and that's what does it for you, it's a hard time to be a performer, but I think that it's been definitely an interesting adapt or die situation for sure.
I mean, the next couple of years are going to be a hard time to be a performer, in my opinion. The polls are saying like 85% of the people that went to theater are like saying, I don't think I'm going to go back. And I think that number is, it's not wrong, but it's artificially inflated because of where people are mentally right now. And
when we get a vaccine, that'll be better.
When it becomes a safer environment to hang out in a room with a bunch of people again, a lot of those people will change their answer, but it's going to be slow. I don't think theater will recover fully for somewhere between 2 and 5 years, probably.
Yeah. That's a fun note. But
yeah.
I mean, so. Yeah. If it ever recovers, like, it might not recover to the way things were. It might change to something else. Like, things, you know, might be different.
Yeah.
It's a different kind of recovery.
We're just gonna have to go.
We're just gonna have to treat theater seats like dudes at urinals, where you never sit next to each other anymore. It's just every other space.
And I mean, one of the things we've talked about in Ville is I think that we're likely to do online shows even after this ends on a somewhat regular basis, because we can reach people we can't reach in the theater.
Yeah. Yeah.
And performers. Yeah. And performers. We've got a performer who's not even in the Twin Cities who can be in shows if we do it online. And that's amazing. So I feel like it's five questions time.
Yeah, five questions time.
We've talked about this. I'd certainly be interested to hear from listeners as far as what are you watching? What are you listening? How are you experiencing comedy right now, aside from the stuff we've talked about? New comedy, not just, you know, watching shows on I don't know. All right. Anyway.
Five questions.
What are our five questions, Molly?
Five questions from Dr. Love, friend Dr. of the show.
Yeah.
Her first question: how long would you last during a zombie apocalypse? This is zombies, legit. I'm gonna say they're fast zombies, The Walking Dead.
Not long. I'm not a runner.
Yeah.
And I don't have guns, and if they're fast zombies, that means they can probably break down your door, which means that.
Well, say you're safe in a house. They don't understand doorknobs.
Oh, well, I mean, then we got enough food to last.
You can break windows. You gotta board it up for sure.
I think I'd last much longer than the average person. I feel like the most effective tool against zombies, fast or slow, is often just common sense. And keeping a cool head in an emergency, and being able to, you know to do what needs to be done.
Yep.
So maybe a year.
I feel like I would also last above average length of time because I've got a lot of medical knowledge. I'm not squeamish. I will shoot your friend if they got bitten, and I am a runner. I can run distances. I would throw a backpack and go run for supplies, like in that game, you know, like it's, yeah.
Yeah.
Question two. What is your favorite shelf stable food?
Speaking of a zombie apocalypse.
Yeah. Your favorite shelf stable food. Mine's raviolios. Not ravioli.
Okay.
Specifically raviolios, which are the smaller. The sauce is better. I like I think they're Chef Boyardee, raviolios. That's my favorite. I can eat them cold. In fact, I often did eat them cold at Gen Con. Just open a little can and eat my little raviolios on the floor.
Nick?
Anything spicy and salty, like whether that's hot and spicy pop chips or like ghost pepper Chex mix or canned like buffalo chicken chili is great. Like it doesn't matter so much as long as it's spicy. That's all I really need.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, one of my go-tos is chunky sirloin burger soup.
Oh, that's a good one.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
It's just like meaty and it's got potatoes and carrots and it's
all cool. Right.
My favorite shelf table food is Frank's hot sauce.
Oh, that's a good idea.
That is a good choice.
You put that on everything.
That's it. Oh, you only have potatoes and carrots? Boom, they're delicious.
Yeah, that's true. It was potatoes and carrots. And you were thinking of what you would put in that soup, weren't you?
Maybe.
All right. Question three. How do you keep your skin soft and supple? So I'll tell you my skincare regime. It's pretty basic. I wash my face with Cetaphil bar soap, sometimes St. Ives apricot scrub. I use an Oil of Olay moisturizer with no fragrance and SPF. That's my deal. Sometimes I do those Korean face masks, the sheets, the paper sheets, when I'm feeling fancy. I haven't had one of those in a long time. But
since I do nothing, I must assume it's genetic.
You don't do any lotion at all?
No.
On your body or anything?
No.
Crazy. In Minnesota?
Yeah.
That's insane. You're getting away with murder.
I pretty much am.
I mean, I don't do much, but what I do is I drink a whole lot of water.
Oh, that too.
I do drink a lot of water.
If you keep hydrated, you're only helping your skin and your body in general, really. I tend to drink 3 liters a day.
Same.
And you know, give or take. More if it's a workout day, I'll drink like another liter or two on top of that. But every once in a while, I'll remember to put on like that Cetaphil face lotion.
Oh, yeah. Stuff. Yep. And then like.
But like once a week or twice a week.
You do like Vaseline lotion on your dry elbows and stuff.
Anywhere I have tattoos, I will hit with lotion after I get out of the shower. And my elbows and. I moisturize my beard. I put on beard oil. I work it through the beard to the skin under my beard. And then I do beard balm on the hair itself. But because it's mostly like oils and waxes, afterward I rub it into my hands real good. And so like that helps moisturize my hands and my face.
I'm starting to think Dr. Love is going to turn us into coats.
Maybe.
Awesome. She's got a lot of material.
Question four. If you were a candy bar, what kind of candy bar would you be?
I do feel like I'm getting sized up to be worn or eaten.
Right? I'd be a whatchamacallit.
Oh, whatchamacallit's a good candy bar. Whatchamacallits
are fucking great. They are multi-layered. They are crispy and chewy. They have a little bit of chocolate, but also like some they have that like wafery stuff in them.
But they've got Crispies and peanut butter and shit.
And they're not very popular.
They're not.
So that's me. I'm a whatchamacallit.
I would be a Kit Kat simply based on the number of them I eat. But also I like cats. So there you go.
Black licorice, because it's technically correct. I mean, people don't like it despite the fact that it's right, but it's right. Everything else is just cherry rope. There is only one licorice and it's black. And if you don't like it, it's because you're a weak person. For real, I love black licorice. I think it's underappreciated and has a dedicated fan base for those who like it.
Just for the rules lawyers, Nick, it does say if you were a candy bar. So
a salted nut roll.
I agree with that.
Covered in black licorice.
Well, because he's like, thorny, a little thorny on the outside and salty, but he's actually creamy, sweet, and white inside.
That's right.
All right, and finally, question five. Who is your favorite Expanse character that isn't Peaches?
I have not ever seen any of the Expanse, so I can't.
You've only read the books then.
I have not read the books.
This is what you need to do while we're all in the quarantine situation, and then we can do an episode on the Expanse.
It's all on
Where is it streaming?
Amazon.
I think on Amazon. Yeah, it's all on Amazon.
Our TV's too old. We don't get Amazon on the TV. All right.
Have an Xbox, though, that has the Amazon app on it. Yeah.
We do have an Xbox. There you go. Yeah.
Boom. Problem solved.
Who's your favorite Expanse character that isn't Peaches, Nick?
Can I say Frank? Is there a Frank?
There's an actress named Frankie who plays the Martian Bobby Draper.
There, that's the one.
Bobby Draper is a good answer,
Bobby Draper.
That's the right answer.
Boom.
I'm torn between the two A characters, so I'll say Avasarala.
Oh, good.
Because she's a boss bitch with a dirty mouth.
Yeah, she
and
is.
That's all things that I like.
I was going to say, is that something that appeals to you?
she's a politician. She's a leader. She's clearly a Slytherin. But, you know, she's like beneficial. She's not a villain or anything. She's great. She's got the Earth's best interests in mind, humanity's best interests in mind. And the actress they have playing her is fucking amazing in the role, too.
Yeah.
So,
I will say, fuck. I'm gonna go with Amos.
Yeah,
that's the other A character he mentioned, but because I was gonna say Avasarala, but I will say Amos because Amos has lived an incredible amount of life in his years. He's like, when the books start, he's like 35, maybe. I mean, and it's a little older because like it's been. It's 200 years in the future, so people live longer. But he's about 35, but he's had a lot of life. And I can sympathize with that. Having like things that have happened to him feel fantastical, horrifying, like they freak people out. But you know, he's to him, it's just what happened, and he's moving past it. But
if you've read the books, or if you've read the books and you haven't read the short stories, the short story "The Churn" is basically Amos's backstory on Earth.
Yeah, it's really good.
It's one of my favorite Expanse stories. It's just a novella, and they're gonna do it next season.
I hope so. Also, Amos is the one that gives Clarissa Mao the nickname Peaches. Yes. So that's really where
there you go.
And that is who our dog is named after.
All right. Well, those are our five answers from Dr. Love. I think, do we have, how many more five questions do we have, Molly? How are we doing?
We've got three more.
Three more. Okay. I mean, but we're in quarantine. You're in quarantine. You know, as much as, you know, there's not, you do as much as you want, do as much as you can. But one of those things that you could do is just write up five questions and send them to us.
You could also be like Michelle Moreland and Mark Roma, friend of the show, who have both become Patreon subscribers. Michelle upped their pledge, and Mark is a new Patreon subscriber to us.
And
so
yeah, so you could do that, and you would get the episodes early. You would have listened to this episode already. You might get videos of the episodes. You might get that. We're working on making that happen. So join us on Patreon if you'd like, but send us five questions, even if you're not a Patreon supporter. But remember, if you are a Patreon supporter, we bump you right to the top of the queue. Those three questions that we got right now, not Patreon supporters. That means you could just jump to the front of the line.
Push them right out of your way.
Yeah, push them out of the way. That's the Slytherin way. That's the Slytherin way. Send it to 5questions@geekswithoutgod.com. And you can always, of course, go and write us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or whatever the hell else you want to do it. So thanks for listening. Everybody, please stay safe. I know it's going to be – this is a long haul. This is a long haul, but we're going to get through this. And the way we get through this is by supporting each other. And we are here for you every Tuesday. We'll see you next week. Bye.
Bye.
Wear a mask.
I don't honestly see the problem. I mean, we've been doing this podcast without a laugh track for years.
We're geeks without God. We don't recognize moral authority. We don't accept divine superiority. We're geeks without God.
Until next time, you can find us blogging at geekswithoutgod.com. You can follow us on Twitter at geekswithoutgod, and you can even like us on Facebook.
We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God. We're geeks without God.
It is super important to wear a mask.